So speaking of targeted therapy of colon cancer, as long as we brought BRAF up, why don't we touch a little bit on HER2? It's kind of been an interesting evolution over the last few years. And I also want to ask you about your paper in Journal National Comprehensive Cancer, JNCCN, looking at a patient who got T-DM1. Really interesting. Can you kind of provide an overview of where we are with HER2 amplified and mutant, for that matter, colorectal cancer?
Yeah, so it's also a small subset, 3 or 4%, and I think it probably took us a while to figure out that these folks could benefit. I remember there was a study maybe a decade ago when trastuzumab was first approved, maybe 20 years ago, and we saw really no activity in relatively unselected patients with colon cancer. So it matters. Sidedness probably matters. Gender may matter. There are a lot of variables with HER2, ERBB2, and the way to affect the receptors. What we did on the patient, and we see probably 3 or 4% of patients who are either HER2 amplified or HER2 mutant when we do our big assay. And this is one of the few advantages of centers that have very large, comprehensive next-gen sequencing assays. So we have what's called the UC500. So we get genes you don't need to know about, you would assume. But surprisingly often, we were seeing HER2 amplification or HER2 mutations. And in particular, we had a patient who was actually a physician scientist from Germany, whose insurance in Germany was perfectly willing to give us whatever he wanted. So when he came, he had rapidly progressive cancer, just really primarily refractory disease, which you almost never see. And we jumped in with T-DM1, and he had about a 7 or 8 month minor response and then stable disease, which at least steadied things a little bit so he could sort of deal with what was going on. Really pretty striking. And he was HER2 amplified. Interestingly, we re-biopsied him when he progressed, and he had lost the HER2 amplification. Whether it was a sampling difference or actually the disease had developed resistance or morphed away from the HER2 amplification, we don't know. But it's a nice opportunity, really, because we have a number of drugs available for it. Not common, but there are studies now looking at bringing this into early use in the subset of patients with HER2 amplified or mutated colon cancer. Again, 3 or 4% of patients.
Just out of curiosity, I guess T-DM1 usually is well tolerated, no alopecia, at least we know from breast cancer, sometimes hepatic problems, thrombocytopenia. How'd this man do?
He did incredibly well. We actually, what the heck, we combined pertuzumab with T-DM1.
Wow.
And he did really almost remarkably well. As you know, we wrote up the case in JNCCN, which looks for sort of the exceptional responders kinds of stuff. This is not average, I'm sure. But he did really remarkably well given the tempo and the course of his disease, although not for as long as we would have liked. He tolerated it very well.
What do you think would be reasonable, if anything, to consider outside a trial setting with HER2 amplified colon cancer? There was a trial, I think it was looking at trastuzumab and lapatinib, if I'm remembering that correctly.
Right. The so-called, I think, Hercules trial.
Is that a strategy you would use outside a trial?
I think it's not crazy. I don't think lapatinib's a very good inhibitor. It's hard to get the dose in that's enough to, lead to suppression. And there are a few studies looking at HER2 combinations going on. Again, this is another one of those things that it'd be interesting to see if any company is going to go forward with a big enough study to get it approved. I mean, there's very little reason for companies to go through the millions of dollars and the man-hours necessary to get a drug approved for another indication when they've already got a bunch of indications already settled. So this may be another example where we'll have to somehow work around whether FDA approval exists or not. But I think in HER2, we need a little more data to make us confident. That's another example where moving it up front may be of benefit. And I suppose in the adjuvant setting, it might be of benefit in patients who are HER2 positive. I actually don't know the likelihood. I don't know how many patients who present with less than stage four disease or HER2 amplified or mutated. Somebody knows that probably, but I don't.
Do you think that T-DM1 would be a reasonable non-protocol option
Yeah.
for a patient? I mean, they've got your paper here.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, that's obviously why we did it. And it's all things wrapped up in one. It's an antibody conjugate, really pretty well tolerated, at least in our patients. So yeah, I think these are interesting questions. The problem for all of these questions is when you've got a couple percentage of patients and they're getting many lines of therapy, and some of these patients you're not. It's one thing to do a study in breast cancer with HER2 at targeting because everybody knows to get HER2 analysis. The average bear with colon cancer in the community may get, we're lucky these days, hopefully they'll get at least all RAS and MSI status and BRAF, they're not going to get HER2. And so doing this, really moving it in force into patients earlier, will require a lot more molecular testing than goes on right now.